Before we get started with this episode, we wanted to thank our listeners for your amazing support of this podcast. We can't wait to bring you future episodes, but we need your support. Just go to givebutter.com/melanatedmoments to help share more stories of exceptional Black artists with thousands of listeners across the U.S. and around the world.
And if you'd like more information on each episode, go to our website or follow us on social media.
Follow my foundation on Facebook at Morning Brown or on the web at morningbrown.org.
And follow me, Joshua Thompson, on Instagram as Sock Joplin. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Melanated Moments in Classical Music. I'm your co-host, Joshua Thompson.
And I'm Angela Brown. Mr. Joshua, are you ready to wow us again with another member of the Melanated Musicians Club?
Now, you already know I am, and today's feature lived a rich life full of celebrity, artistry, and influence in a time that has colonialism written all over it.
I see we're scoring a history lesson again this week.
Yup, but today we're going to highlight the life and times of renowned violinist George Bridgetower and how his acclaim is interwoven into this like unsung story of colonialism and anti-slavery movements in the 18th and 19th century in Britain.
Wow, okay. Well, let's start with the man of the hour. Who was George Bridgetower?
Well, here we go. George Bridgetower was a virtuoso violinist born in Poland in 1778 to a Polish mother and a West Indian father, but there is competing research that indicates his father was actually from Ethiopia. Mm. His parents happened to be servants of the Prince of Hungary, and the Prince of Hungary just happened to be the angel patron of Joseph Haydn.
Oh.
Yeah, right. So he's already in the money, right? Already
in it.
So he starts music very, very early. And by the age of 10, he's performing professionally in Paris and London and Bath and Bristol, in addition to playing for the royal court of King George III. It's actually King George IV who oversaw and financed Bridgetower's continued music education.
Oh, okay.
So he becomes a member of the violin section for Joseph Haydn's famous concerts in London, and he studies with the Royal Opera Academy and the Royal Academy of Music. He performs multiple times with Beethoven, had a close relationship with Beethoven, and that composer actually wrote the violin sonata number 9 for Bridgetower. So he's already making friends in high places.
Wow. And
yeah, right? And so it's in 1807, he's inducted into the Royal Society of Musicians. Mm-hmm. However, he's got this illustrious career. Everyone knows who he is, but despite being charismatic, stylish, prodigious, and well-connected, Bridgetower dies in relative obscurity and in poverty in 1860.
Wow, I tell you, so the man was playing for kings and academies and rubbing elbows with everybody.
He really was all over Europe, and there's so much social historical significance in his own life and the social environment he lived through. But before we get to all that, let's take a listen to one of his earlier works. It's entitled Henry, which is a ballad of sorts that Bridgetower composed around the time he was getting his bachelor's in music from Cambridge. And he dedicated this piece to the Princess of Wales at that time. And it's just this really fun, light and coquettish sonnet-like piece for voice.
Okay.
Oh,
Lovely.
No, it really was.
It was very light, a flourish here and there, and sounds fairly canonical for the time period.
You know, it really is. And yes, it is nice. This is actually, I think he wrote a lot of pieces, but they've only been able to find two of them. And this is one of those. You know, it's not overly complicated, but it really does show the refinement associated with the Age of Reason and traditional classical repertoire in the time in which he's living.
So, Joshua, you're our resident historian.
Yes.
Why don't you give us some of your insight and observations about his lifetime in Britain between 1778 and 1860?
Okay, good, because I thought you would never, ever ask.
Oh, no, I didn't first. What
the heck? I know. Okay, well, but you did. And you know I love this part because his accomplishments alone are stunning, but it's the social context of this time in Britain that for me really crystallizes the immense significance of his work. So please indulge me and get ready for your history lesson.
All right. Listen, you're ready. We're clenched. Let's go.
So here's what I find fascinating is this guy is living in a time where he's born just before the American Revolution. And, you know, he's born 11 years before the French Revolution, which was modeled after our own. And so we tend to think of all this time living in a vacuum, but you know, Bridgetower is in his mid-50s when Britain finally decides to abolish the entire institution of slavery, from the trade all the way to the actual practice itself, right? And so I think this is what's really cool, because, well, maybe not cool, but this is what's poignant is he's living and performing in the time of European monarchies. And monarchies are going through this immense change because America's on the scene, shaking up economic things. And how are we funding all of this? It's through the global slave trade. So just like you have, you know, the Prince of Hungary who's funding Haydn, that money's coming from the slave trade. So I think that's kind of remarkable, right?
And messed up. But
super messed up. So this is part of classical music that we don't talk about, but today we gonna. So there's all of that context, and he's performing and influencing social cultures, doing the Enlightenment. He's living on the cusp of global reformation, transformations in the arts, economies, geopolitics, industrialization, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, let me ask this question. So he is born in the courts of royalty, but he wasn't considered a slave?
He wasn't. You know, you kind of have to think Europe and the United States use and operate and perpetuate the slave trade and slavery very differently. Okay. Europe's all about class differences, whereas the United States is definitely about race, right? You're either black or you're white. So yeah, so it's kind of like who you know in Europe sometimes gives you a pass. And I'm glad you brought it up because right before his death, it's the year before the American Civil War, but Bridgetower is living in parallel lives here with Ignatius Sancho, who we've highlighted before, and he's a big essayist on the abolitionist movement. They're contemporaries of each other. Okay. This is the same time as violinist, you know, Joseph Bellone or Chevalier de Saint-Georges, and a little bit further removed, Samuel Coolidge Taylor and Robert Nathaniel Dett. So none of this is existing in a vacuum at all.
Huh. Okay. Well, you know, this is all fascinating, Joshua, because rarely do we consider that classical music on the nose was being created, composed, and maybe influenced by Black peoples, because the history and music are always discussed separately.
Right. And that's why we do what we do, because we're going to talk about it all, boo, right? Like I said earlier, nothing exists in a vacuum, including classical music, and maybe especially classical music. So let's take a listen to the final movement of Beethoven's Sonata No. 9 for violin and piano. This is the original sonata that was written for Bridgetower, but Beethoven later renamed it after a fairly significant falling out between the two.
Ooh, now there's some tea there. What was the falling out over?
Well, we're going to get to that in a sec because I think it's, I know, girl, it's some petty trash. It really is. Petty trash, if you ask me. But at any rate, here's the third movement from the Sonata No. 9. Thank you.
Yes, bravo. Ooh, honey, I like that. It was light and airy and it just tripped over and I just loved it. Now tell me what they fall out over.
Okay. I was going to say, yeah, it got a nice little bounce to it. Okay. So I suppose we do need a direct answer to that question after all that virtuosity. Okay, so to answer your question and to spill this tea, Beethoven and Bridgetower had an immense amount of respect for each other. So I think that's important to highlight first, right?
Okay.
However, they were both very popular with the ladies. And Beethoven had this lady that he really liked, and Bridgetower did not like her, and he got a little jazzy and threw a little bit of shade, and Beethoven took it personally and was like, we're done here.
Woo, child, that sounds like some Eugene Onegin stuff, baby. Look it up, because it's a mess. Well, I guess his career takes a nosedive after their split.
You know, it does. It really undoes his career, because even though Bridgetower was so well-respected and connected, a rift of that significance with a composer as prolific as Beethoven, yeah, it's going to cause some problems, right? So Beethoven's career, totally fine, right? And unfortunately, you know, Bridgetower falls out of favor and he winds up dying in poverty and obscurity, which is just so, so upsetting because he really was the most celebrated musician of his time. But fortunately, ourselves and others around the world are really starting to tap into the history of this brother. And thank goodness that they are.
Well, it sounds like he bit the hand that was feeding him.
Yeah, yeah.
But once again, Joshua, you have given us musical history, world history, and another name to add to the wall of melanated musicians. I'm Angela Brown.
And I'm Joshua Thompson. And this is
Melanated Moments in Classical Music.
Can we just take a moment and appreciate how much better our podcast sounds? We recently acquired some gear from RLX Acoustics, an Indianapolis-based company that focuses on helping their customers and partners attain truer sound within their productions. We cannot thank them enough for their support of this podcast.
Melanated Moments in Classical Music is a production of Classical Music Indy. Our theme music was composed by Laura Carpenter.
Melanated Moments in Classical Music is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency. Additional support comes from the Indy Arts Council and the City of Indianapolis.